Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection from Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. The prevalence of and death rates for many cancers are improving in the United States, and this is true for our topic today, colorectal cancer. In fact, the rates for new colorectal cancer cases have been falling each year for about the last 10 years. My recollection is it's about at a 2% per year rate, which is really pretty impressive. Death rates and five-year survival rates are also improving as well. Our guests today are Kimberly Morgan. She is the Health Systems Manager for the Great West Division of the American Cancer Society, and two colorectal cancer surgeons from Anchorage, Dr. Mark Kemmons and Dr. Dan Rossi. Both have been on the program before. This is Kimberly's first time. And what we're going to be doing is discussing why we are having these findings and what we need, especially as listeners, to keep these statistics improving over time. You can reach us with any questions or comments that you have. If you're in Anchorage, our number is 550-8433. That's our number in Anchorage, 550-8433. We have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Welcome to all of you, especially Kimberly, you, since this is the first time.
Thank you.
Nice to have you guys here. Kimberly, tell us a little bit about the Cancer Society first. What's the purpose? What's your aims? And then you can, if you want to, move into what you're doing specifically there.
So at the American Cancer Society, I am the primary care and health systems manager, and I also work with state health systems. And so most of what we do is we implement system practice, policy changes, evidence-based interventions, and promising practices that align with American Cancer Society and health system priorities to advance prevention, early detection, and quality of life to include survivorship and palliative care.
That almost sounds like somebody involved in healthcare in a big way. We're going through a lot of changes in healthcare. People don't understand it. We're moving towards much more quality and access as being determinants on how actually we get paid, it turns out. So sounds like the Cancer Society is involved in this in a big way.
Absolutely.
But you're new. You haven't been up here very long.
Right. So I've been with the American Cancer Society for a few months. And I am tasked with increasing colorectal cancer screening rates by 80% by 2018. Mm-hmm. So I believe that's about 77,000 Alaskans. Of course, I can't do that job by myself. I would love to. But I have to engage partners in colorectal cancer work so that we can focus on reaching our goal, which includes hospitals, employers. We have an employer health challenge that we're trying to get involved with. Primary care physicians, federally qualified health centers, and communities.
And so the current goal is to have 80% of Alaskans screened for colorectal cancer. Is that what I heard you say?
Correct.
Is that goal new? Is that different? Is that changed?
Well, it's a national goal that we're mm-hmm. trying to reach. And so each ACS across the country and globally are trying to reach that goal. And so what we're trying to do is just increase awareness, increase education about it, lift the veil on the stigma surrounding colorectal cancer screenings, mm-hmm. and just move the initiative forward, get folks engaged.
How about statistics? I made the comment at the beginning, based on some information I looked at, is that new cases have been decreasing, is my recollection, somewhere in the neighborhood of 2% per year for about 10 years. Does that jive in with what you understand or know about colorectal cancer rates?
Well, what I can tell you is, as far as the screening goes, I know it's the number two leading cause of death here. But if we can achieve 80% by 2018, that's 277,000 cases. And 203,000 colorectal cancer deaths would be prevented by 2030 mm-hmm. if we can get 80% screened by 2018.
Gotcha. Mark, you and Dan have comments about the rates?
The yeah, absolutely, Thad. I've been doing this long enough now that I've seen some big changes already. When I started, approximately 60,000 Americans were dying every year of this disease, and we're down to about 50,000 Americans. Mm-hmm. And as already stated, that makes it the number two cancer killer in the United States if you combine men and women as a group. So we have a long way to go. When I started in this field, we had approximately one-third of people being appropriately screened, and now we're at approximately 50%. So our efforts are paying off, and the decreased rates of colorectal cancer deaths that you're talking about are almost certainly attributable in large part to increased screening efforts. So the goal of the American Cancer Society to get overall screening rates up to 80% will save a tremendous number of lives. So absolutely, as colorectal surgeons, we would fully endorse that.
We've got a caller, and I think I'm going to go ahead and take that caller. It's getting into the age and the issue of screening and colonoscopy, which we need to come back to. And my plan would be to go ahead and talk about what's the natural history of cancer, of colorectal cancer, so we can get some feeling about your issues that you commented on. The reason why we're seeing a decrease is probably related to screening, and we're also seeing decreases in death rate, which perhaps also relate to the screening plus new technologies and treatment. Penny, you're on line one.
Hello. My question is, I'll give it a little preface first. I've been having a colonoscopy every 5 years because they keep finding one small polyp. My mother was killed by getting a colonoscopy, and they perforated her colon, and she was a lot older. So my question is, at what age can one stop having these things, because I'm more afraid of them than I am of colon cancer?
Yep, good question. So, a couple of things I'd comment on. The way our human brain works is we associate much more problems with close situations like this than statistics. I'm going to ask the colonoscopy guys here in a minute, what's the likelihood of that happening? But the other issue is, well, wait a minute, I have a polyp, so how long do I keep doing these things I'm not too comfortable doing? Who wants to handle that one?
Well, I'll start, Thad. That's an excellent question. Colonoscopy perforation rates have dropped significantly due to advancements in the new scopes. They're thinner and they're softer and they're more flexible. The rate of perforation should be approximately 1 in 10,000. Some people quote 1 in 5,000, but it should be rare. And so if you weigh that against the tremendous benefit of preventing colorectal cancer through screening, it comes out heavily in the favor of screening. As to the question of how long you should continue that, if you are getting colonoscopies regularly every 5 years, you mentioned, and they are finding the type of polyps that are known to cause colorectal cancer, and these are known as adenomatous polyps, then you're correct. The recommendation is to continue with regular screening. But most people feel by the time someone is 70 or 80, as just a general rule, that if they're otherwise healthy and they haven't had any advanced adenomas or adenomas with the imminent precancerous changes, that you could talk at some time about stopping screening. However, you have to look at your family history. If people in your family live to be 110, then maybe at age 70 you should keep going. On the other hand, if you have other medical conditions and your risks of colonoscopy start to rise as you get older, then in a discussion with your healthcare provider, you could maybe come up with something that made sense for you.
Well, okay, but he's the one that's getting paid for doing these things, you know?
Right.
And
right.
I'm 73 now, and I get one small polyp. They didn't say it was precancerous, but I just get one each time. That's why they put me off a 10-year schedule onto a 5-year schedule. And I want to stop doing this.
Yeah. All right. Dan, how would you answer a question?
So, you know, I don't think this is just straightforward. As Mark mentioned, 75, 80 years of age, it's recommended that you can have a discussion about should you continue. And I think that it comes down to, you know, quality of life, functionality in your life. And so if you're, you know, very active and moving, and if you were to say, if I were diagnosed with a cancer, would I want treatment at this point in my life? Then that is someone that I would continue to have a discussion about continuing to screen. Or survey, I should, you know, continue the scopes for surveillance. But if you were to say, I don't want to do this, and regardless of where I am in my life, you know, if I'm, you know, 75 or 80, I would not want any treatment, then I think that's part of the conversation to have in terms of making that decision to say, I'm going to stop with that surveillance at this point.
So, yeah, the other thing I think is important to hear, Penny, and I'm going to ask the surgeons here to correct me if I'm wrong, is that what the real issue is here is individual choices. And we're increasingly in healthcare trying to make sure that you have some input. And that's what I'm hearing Dan say. He said, what's the quality of life issue? What are you doing? What are your worries about having the surgery? What are your risks for the surgeries? All these things are individualized. There are national guidelines with which people use to help guide those decisions, but it really boils down to how you feel about it. I would say that, if you're a normal average risk, that your risk of having serious complications of a colonoscopy is pretty low, despite your prior experiences with your mother, which is certainly unfortunate. But those are the kind of things you'd need to have a discussion with your provider. You're right. You could argue that your provider is biased towards doing that. That is going to be true where you do your banking. That's true where you buy your cars. That's true with everything. I think in medicine, I would like to say we're trying to use as best we can the evidence that we have for the recommendations. And again, assuming you have the right kind of polyps, there are some other polyps that are not such a risk, that the best thing would be to get some advice. And if you're uncomfortable with the advice you're getting, then get somebody else's advice. That's easy to do in this community.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for calling, Penny. Did I overstate my point, guys, or
not at all?
Very fair.
And I think your final point that the patient's decisions should be the most important factor absolutely are true. And I think as surgeons, our most important job sometimes is providing the patient with enough information that they can make the right decision for them.
I was looking at just statistically, and it's not fair to necessarily compare the complication rates of colonoscopy, but a person's lifetime risk of developing colorectal cancer is about 1 in 20 in the United States. We're talking about 1 in 10,000 perforations. Now, as we get older, that rate of chances you get in colorectal cancer goes up. This is overall
sure.
rate.
And also you're quoting the average risk individual.
Yep.
She's at elevated risk, so her lifetime risk is closer to 1 in 6.
She's at elevated risk because of age and also because of
she has
the
a prior
polyps.
History of adenomatous colon polyps.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about these polyp guys. We know we can do some different kind of screens. We're going to come back. We'll talk about the different kind of screens. What happens with cancer? How fast does it develop? What gets confused for it? What are the different kind of words polyp mean? Somebody tell me about this.
Dan, do you want to start or do you want me to start?
Sure. In terms of the most common polyp, the adenomatous polyp, that's the one that you hear when people say, well, it's a precancerous polyp, typically. That's the majority. And about 80% of these cancers are arising from these types of polyps. And, in the guidelines are set, basically, if you have a normal colonoscopy, that your next surveillance colonoscopy is about 10 years. And the reason being is that it takes on average, about it, to start from a polyp and then develop into a cancer is about a 10-year cycle. Not always. There are more aggressive types of cancers, and so, these guidelines are a generalized recommendation, but there are variations within those guidelines if you are at a higher risk. But that's the most common type of polyp. There are other types of polyps that are found, hyperplastic polyps sometimes, and I think sometimes there's some confusion about that because the risk of developing a cancer from a hyperplastic polyp, they used to say it was no risk, but there's been some debate whether that's pretty, if there is that risk, but it's pretty minimal. And with that, the guidelines, for the screening intervals don't change with those type of polyps, but that's why sometimes people will hear I had a little polyp, they thought, and then, they ended up still telling me, 10 years for the next scope. And so that's the most common type of polyp that you hear about and that develop into those cancers.
I'd just like to add, just in really simple terms, a polyp is a growth on the lining of your colon. And polyps can be subdivided into various types of growths. And the most worrisome are the type that are true tumors. And a medical term for tumor is neoplasm. And the group of polyps which are true neoplasms, which are abnormal cellular growths on the wall of your colon, are called adenomatous colon polyps. And those are the ones that we worry about the most. And as Dr. Rossi mentioned, there are a number of subtypes of other polyps, some of which have lower risk, but still some risk. And then there are some types of colon polyps that have no increased risk of colon cancer. Unfortunately, as the person doing the colonoscopy, our naked eye will not tell us which growth on the wall of the colon is precancerous and which is not. So every polyp is a bad polyp to someone who's doing screening colonoscopy because we need to remove those or at least take pieces of tissue so that we can examine them under the microscope to determine if they are the precancerous type.
Let me remind listeners really quickly, we're talking about colorectal cancer, particularly why some of the evidence is that the number of new cases is decreasing and why the 5-year survival rate is improving. If you've got questions or comments, this is a very good time to get some very good answers. You can call us locally at 550-8433, 550-8433. Toll-free number 1-888-353-5752, and our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. So, Dan, you'd said one thing that I've tried to clarify for listeners. Again, when I hear the word, or when a listener hears the word cancer, we may say, oh, yeah, there's prostate cancer, there's breast cancer, and there's bowel cancer. But within that group of adenomatous colorectal cancers, they act differently, just like there are different people out there. And for reasons that we don't really understand completely yet, there may be very aggressive ones and ones that are not. A consequence of that is you could do everything right. I've had my colonoscopies. I did what they tell me to do. And I've waited now 10 years, and I'm coming up on time to do the other one. I could get looked at and find that I've got a very bad cancer going, even though I've been doing everything right, because on average, I got the bad straw, so to speak. I got the bad acting cancer going. It's very hard to write a perfect rule for testing for all these things. Sometimes poop happens, you know.
You're very true. And then, you know, there is a known miss rate.
Yep.
Because when you're looking inside the colon with a colonoscopy, yep, there are valves which can make it hard to visualize. You mentioned the decrease in rates with screening. But I also think, there's some emerging technologies that are pretty neat in terms of the different types of colonoscopes that are coming out, which are improving visualization within the colon. So I think that's going to be some exciting progress here in the future.
Yeah, it's another reason why you could do everything right and still mess up is the polyp was there but was missed and something. And I did a program with a gastroenterologist, and he brought that up. It never even dawned on me. But preparation may have something to do with it, the skill of the person doing it, the equipment that you're doing it. All of those are factors that may impact on how accurate the test really is.
Absolutely.
So it's not 100% accurate.
No, it's not.
There is no test that's like that.
And colorectal cancer screening is like anything else in life. It's a balance of risks and benefits. We could prioritize a screening program that led to the lowest possible rate of colorectal cancer, and that might involve starting screening people at age 20 and screening them every single year of their life using some of the newer, more advanced colonoscopy techniques that have side viewing and multiple angles. The cost of that program would be absolutely prohibitive, and during that intensive screening program, we would end up injuring some people who otherwise would never have had a problem with colorectal cancer. So it's a balance between pros and cons.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very, very important point is that, you can tighten down the criteria to the point where you're finding a lot, but you also find a lot of false positives, which lead to some bad things to happen. Someone who gets a cancer discovered early, that's a good deal to someone who has complications of working up what really turns out not to be a real cancer is not necessarily so happy about that. All right, let's see. We have a couple more calls in. Let's see if we can take one of those real quickly. Mike, you're on line one.
Oh, hi.
What can I do for you?
I've been looking at, I got a couple concerns that I go visit a doctor for, and he's always asking me about colorectal. It's I don't feel comfortable with the camera, and just wondering why, and if there's a lot of money over there that's being directed to doctors. I don't know why, but it just sounds everybody's promoting it. All the doctors are, for some reason or other.
Or let's say you were the public health department, and your job is to help people be healthy. You with me so far?
Yeah.
And you got a something that works and decreases the incidence of colorectal cancer by 2%, 2 in 100 every year for 10 years. Now, would you want that information to get out and people to be doing it, or would you take some other tact?
I think there's other health concerns that maybe people should be, or doctors should be directing their attention to.
Such as?
Well, I got three concerns, and I'm not going to discuss those on the radio, but public health concerns. What I'm wondering is, why is every time I visit a doctor, they're asking me to do the colorectal test?
Well, it would depend on your age. It's recommended nationally after, I'm going to say, age 50. I'm a pediatrician, but I think it's after age 50. And those are people with average age
by
risk.
By the time you reach age 50, in average risk.
Because your risk of developing colorectal cancer increases with age. Wait, just a second. Dan wants to say something.
Was it Mike?
Yeah.
Mike, this is Dr. Rossi from Alaska Colorectal Surgery. The one thing that I would just like to impress upon you and why I'm such a big proponent of colonoscopy, and maybe this will help you a little bit. It's not about dollars, as you inquired about, but this is one of the few cancers that we can prevent, you know, with screening. And what I mean by that is, with a colonoscopy, you go in and you find a polyp, and you take that polyp out before it ever has a chance to become a colon cancer, right? Because eventually, in the majority of the time, it will develop into a cancer over the years. And so we can take it out beforehand and prevent the cancer development, prevent a person needing a surgery down the road. And this is one of the few cancers where you can do that. Compared to other cancers out there, we do tests and they picked up the cancer once you have it, but they're not actually preventing it. And whereas colonoscopy, we can actually prevent these cancers ahead of time. And I think that's a big difference. And that's what, why I'm such a fervent believer in people being screened and trying to educate people about having a colonoscopy. So that for me, that's what really drives that, if that helps you at all.
Can I get a blood test? Wouldn't there be something that's less invasive?
Yeah, there are some other technologies that are coming out, and we're going to discuss those in a little bit without having to have a colonoscopy. I've run into a similar problem with a teenage boy that I'm seeing who's awful young to have colon cancer, but he doesn't want to go through the testing that's necessary. So I can understand that resistance. And talking with a physician, there are options potentially, but you need to understand the pros and cons of each of those options as well. And we're going to talk about that on the program here a little bit later, Mike.
Can I say something else? I was sick early in life, and I had it was a test, and there was a camera, and there was no anesthetic, and I really resistant.
It sounds like you've had a bad experience, and you got to weigh the risks and benefits. And, depending on your age and your situation, it might be, and sounds like it probably is, the right thing to you to go ahead and get the screening. But talk with your physicians about it honestly and express what your concerns are. All right. Thanks for your call. Millie, you're on line one.
From Willow.
Yep. How are you?
This is about my husband. His aunt died of colon cancer. 5 years ago, he had a colonoscopy, and it was negative. But occasionally, we like to do that tissue test in the toilet with bowel movement.
Yep.
To check if there's any bleeding or if there's any development.
Right.
And those tests are so difficult to find. Once a year, we go to the health fair, and we can purchase one of those. But if there was more availability, and more commonly known and understood than perhaps the screening, the self-screening, would be more frequently utilized.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good point. I think you're talking about what's called a fecal occult blood test. And I think what we'll do is we'll talk about that, and we'll go ahead and talk about the different screenings after a break. And there's pros and cons of each of these things, and one of the points you're bringing up is availability. So I'll make sure we talk about that as well, Millie. So
in my pharmacy.
Yep.
And they didn't know what I was talking about. I thought it would be right on the shelf. I could pick one up. Yep.
All right. Give us a couple of minutes. We'll talk about all of these screening technologies, and I'll make sure we talk about availability of that test, and make sure we figure out how you can get that done fairly easy. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Let me just take time now to take our normal half break. I want to remind listeners again, you're listening to Line One, your health connection. Our local number, once again, 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Our email address, lineone@alaskapublic.org. And we're going to take a very short break. We'll continue this discussion of colorectal cancer with Kimberly Morgan, Dr. Dan Rossi, and Dr. Mark Kimmons. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line One on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Caught me. We were talking about the availability of some of this testing and the screening technology, and we'll get right into that. But I want to welcome everybody back and remind listeners again, you're listening to Line One, your health connection. This is originating from Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. My guests are Kimberly Morgan, who is with the Great West Division of the American Cancer Society. She's joined them fairly recently and is working really hard to try to get a national and statewide screening rate up to 80%, because as we've increased that rate of screening, we've seen the incidence of new cancers begin to decrease and survival rates increase as well. And it seems to be the one of the main reasons for that occurrence being noted. If you've got questions, you can email us directly at lineone@alaskapublic.org. You have to spell out line one, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, lineone@alaskapublic.org. And our local number again, 550-8433. Please remember, if you're listening on Monday night between 8 and 9, you're listening to a taped rebroadcast. We're not here to answer those questions. You can go to our website, alaskapublic.org, look up the Line One connection, and we have an archive where you can listen to this program or previous programs as well. So, Kimberly, you wanted to address this issue of getting availability of, say, the fecal occult blood test?
Well, the one that I was going to speak on was the FIT-KIT testing.
Okay.
We actually were able to work with a partner to provide FIT-KIT test at a cancer screening event that took place on the North Slope in two villages, in Wainwright and Akwesasne villages. And through handing out those FIT-KIT tests, we were able to prevent one cancer, and that's what it's really all about. And so we're looking at ways to see how we can partner to get the testing into areas that don't have access to colonoscopies,
right?
Like that. But through the American Cancer Society, if they do need a way to get to a place where they are able to get a colonoscopy, we do have services that we can provide at no cost to the patient to help them get where they need to go to have these screenings and treatments taken care of.
So Millie called from Willow if she was interested in getting, we'll have to talk about what a FIT test is here in just a second. Sure. Let's make sure we define that. But you, Mike, could direct her how to get that the equipment to do those tests.
I would encourage her to give us a call and reach out to us and see how we can be helpful.
All right. So what's a FIT test?
I'm going to give that to
fecal immunohistochemical testing.
Oh, that's a long word. What does that mean? And how does it differ from a fecal occult blood test?
Well, a fecal occult blood test is looking for occult, which means hidden blood.
Okay.
And so you smear a little bit of your bowel movement, usually with a little stick, onto this card, and then you put a chemical reagent onto that card, and then if there's blood, it changes color.
And that may or may not indicate cancer.
Absolutely. That test is notoriously unreliable. It can be both falsely positive or falsely negative. Mm-hmm. One of the problems is there's a number of dietary factors, red meats, certain vitamin C, for instance, that can turn that test positive. So it's definitely not a perfect test. Fecal immunohistochemical testing is a relatively new test where you're actually looking for proteins or antigens or pieces of the actual cancer itself or the polyp itself, which shows up in the stool and then can be labeled and can interact with a reagent to turn colors or have a positive or negative result, depending on which test you're using.
So one of the things that Kimberly was saying is that there are parts of this state in particular, and you could argue parts of the world, where colonoscopy, and we'll come back to colonoscopy in a minute, may be difficult to get done. It takes somebody with the equipment, the technology, and so forth to get it done. So screening tests such as fecal occult blood or the immunohistochemical tests may be helpful, not perfect. They're better than doing nothing.
I think that's absolutely true. Dan and I were talking before the show about the non-colonoscopy screening modalities, because we all agree that colonoscopy is by far the most effective way of screening. But some of these other tests do have applicability in rural areas or in patients who are not suitable for colonoscopy.
So the fecal occult blood or the FIT test, if it's positive, suggests that there may be a risk of cancer, and that would lead to some further investigations, one of which probably would be a colonoscopy.
Correct.
Almost certainly.
Correct.
And the FIT tests are recommended to be done annually, which is why our hope is to continue to be able to offer that service in those rural areas.
So sometimes you can't do what you need to do, and you do your best you can. So that test would be an annual. And I think that's the recommendation for the fecal occult blood test as well, is annual.
Typically, yes, but that highlights another problem. I mean, if you're using it as your only screening test and it's always been normal and then it's not normal, that can be very useful because that will trigger a colonoscopy typically.
Right.
Yeah. But the catch is if it's intermittently not normal and then intermittently normal, at which, you know, you definitely need your baseline colonoscopy, but then 2 years later, if the test is not normal, do you get another colonoscopy? And these become more complicated.
So Mike had called earlier, and he sounds like he doesn't want an invasive test. For one reason or the other, it's not something he wants to do. He's being asked to do that or think about doing it by his primary care physician. So he has some options, but he needs to understand that those options, if I'm saying this right, because he has the availability of colonoscopy, he chooses not to do it. He has options that are non-invasive, but the accuracy of those will fall down relative to the colonoscopy. They're going to be not as accurate.
Correct. And if they have a positive, he's going to get a colonoscopy anyways.
The colonoscopy would be recommended. That's one of the problems about the technologies is we find something, then none of these other things do anything about it. Whereas the colonoscopy at the time might be able to alleviate some risk. And I guess I need to define that a little bit. If you find an adenoma, you find a polyp at colonoscopy, you're going to go ahead and do something about that polyp.
Yeah, I think that's the one, the word therapeutic hasn't been thrown out. But I think that's one of the advantages of the colonoscopy is that You see a polyp right there, you take it out. You know, if it's with, you know, if it's not too large, and you can take it out at the time. So I think that's a benefit. I think, you know, some of these newer tests that are coming out, I think they will continue to improve, and you may find that, you know, down the road they become more accepted and more of a standard. But at this time, like for a fecal occult blood test, my concern with that is always that you're now seeing bleeding, which means it could be a more advanced polyp tumor, and you know, because it's now showing the symptom of bleeding or your blood is positive, something that could have been prevented earlier has now progressed to a point that you know you may not be able to treat it, you know, to deal with it with an endoscope, and now you're going to require surgery or have more advanced disease.
So it is fair to say people may have heard about fancy CT scans, swallowing capsules that take pictures of your intestine, all kinds of things. But the standard of care in the United States for most of us right now who can get it is a colonoscopy, because it's the most accurate, and it could be therapeutic at the time. You can take care of it at one time, and the others all lead to almost always to another colonoscopy anyway.
Correct.
Is that maybe the best way to explain?
That's absolutely correct. And with some of the radiological procedures, such as virtual colonoscopy, which is a special type of CAT scan, typically you require a full bowel preparation, which most people say is the worst part of colonoscopy.
I would agree.
Additionally, it's usually not done under sedation, the virtual colonoscopy, whereas with colonoscopy, typically you're asleep. Yeah,
right.
With virtual colonoscopy, the instructions say air should be inflated to maximum tolerated. It's very uncomfortable. Something does have to be placed inside the body, and it requires a bowel prep. And if you have a positive test, you get a real colonoscopy anyways. So I think, except in special circumstances, we wouldn't recommend that as a general screening tool.
Yeah. Well, I've had two. I don't remember hardly anything about either one of them except the prep. So,
absolutely.
I would second that.
I have an email. It says, Alaska Care, the state of Alaska retirement insurance, won't cover screening colonoscopy, only a diagnostic test requiring some kinds of some symptoms first. I had a blood occult test, which was negative, so I didn't get a colonoscopy and probably won't be able to until I qualify for Medicare. There seems to be short-sighted on the state. Are you working with the state to change this policy? How good is fecal occult blood screening until then? So a couple of questions. You guys probably run into this before.
This is an incredibly frustrating issue for any healthcare provider, and this is not just for colonoscopy. We have insurance companies that refuse to pay for screening, and we have colonoscopies that only pay for screening. It's infuriating. It makes absolutely no sense for an insurance company to not pay for screening, since colorectal cancer is dramatically more expensive for them to look after.
Right.
We try to appeal. We also often ask patients to remember if they've ever seen any blood on the toilet paper, because people often say, yes, of course I do. And then we say, well, that's actually blood. Even though your fecal occult testing wasn't positive, you saw blood on the toilet paper.
Right.
And so oftentimes people will remember symptoms that justify diagnostic colonoscopy.
Right.
But this is an infuriating and frustrating issue that overlaps with all sorts of difficult health policy issues, which we're all facing right now.
Again, I am not an expert on this, and if I'm saying something wrong, I want somebody to correct me. But my understanding is part of the Affordable Care Act was that recognized national screening technologies have to be covered, except there are some grandfathered in insurances, which Alaska, the state retirement plan, is, unfortunately. And whoever is administering that, or they're really outside of what seems to me to be fairly acceptable, normal, almost malpractice if you don't do it kinds of recommendations now. So unfortunately for Tom, who wrote this email, I don't have any great answers. Kimberly, maybe the American Cancer Society is involved in some kind of work with legislators to change this?
Yes, that's what I was going to speak up and say is the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, or ACS-CAN for short, is working on the policy pieces to try to help close that gap so that it can be accessible and affordable for everyone.
Another email that came in, somebody wanted to know, can colonoscopy tests find other kinds of cancers? So at the time of a colonoscopy, might something else cancerous be found?
There is the possibility of finding a distal small bowel cancer or tumor or abnormality. Because at the time of colonoscopy, we typically pass a scope into the small intestine where it enters into the colon. So that's possible. In terms of other cancers outside of the colon, no. You can find other abnormalities within the colon in terms of, you know, other inflammatory bowel disease or, you know, other abnormalities. But in terms of a stomach cancer or more proximal intestine, no.
I would just add that unless that is a very advanced cancer and it is growing from the outside of the colon through the colon wall into the colon, and occasionally we do find that, but that is not anything we want to find, and it's very rare.
We have not talked about prevention. Clearly, it appears that the increasing rates of colonoscopy and screening has allowed us to find cancers earlier and therefore prevent deaths and increase 5-year survival rate. But what about prevention? What do we know about that? And if people wouldn't mind commenting that there are high-risk individuals who might want to be aware that they're at high risk, which we haven't discussed. Two separate questions there. What do we know about prevention? Risk factors.
Well, I'll start off. The most important is genetics. It's your family history. So by far with colorectal cancer, your family history is the single greatest risk factor, and knowing your family history is extremely important. If you have a positive family history of colorectal cancer or polyps, you should start screening earlier and have screening more frequently. Other than family history, unfortunately, all of the other things we can do as human beings are relatively weak. And they don't make a huge amount of difference. As an example, I have a vegan marathon running patient who has colorectal cancer and did nothing personally wrong. However, we can talk as a group about things that we know are helpful, such as keeping a healthy body weight, exercising, cutting down alcohol, cutting down processed meats, increasing dietary factors such as calcium, folate, and vitamin D. And can you guys think of any others that I'm not mentioning off the top of my head?
Smoking.
Absolutely. For sure.
So what I'm hearing you say, and again, I think there's kind of a public misunderstanding about this. We're definitely in an age where we're thinking about how we eat and exercise and so forth, and I don't want to downplay that, but most of the time when we get to cancers, the evidence is not so much environment. I got to be very careful about trying to be very accurate. What I'm saying is not so much environment in general, and we're going to talk about one environmental problem that can be an issue, but it's more genetics. So what we eat and how we exercise and how much we weigh is kind of somewhat pales, at least for colorectal cancer cause, as far as we know, compared to genetics. I'm saying that right?
Unfortunately, that's true.
There are some environmental issues, some things that we do to ourselves that increase risk, and certainly smoking has been shown to be a case, and alcohol is certainly associated. But we haven't talked about human papillomavirus, and I think we ought to do that. It may seem funny to talk about it related to colorectal cancer, because the reason for the human papillomavirus vaccine, which is being given, is to prevent cervical cancer in women, and has already, again, been shown to be dramatically successful in decreasing the rate. Why would we talk about HPV vaccine with colorectal cancer? Kimberly, you want to jump out there?
Well, because there's actually a vaccine to prevent cancer, the HPV vaccine, and not only protects you against cervical cancer, but also otolaryngeal cancer, anal cancer, in other types of cancers. And so that's important to bring up.
So this virus has a tendency to affect certain kinds of cells lining our body. And the cervix is one, but it turns out the head and neck cancers and then anal cancer, right?
Right.
So it gets us into the colorectal area. And Mark, you said before the program that you've also noticed an increase in colorectal. At the same time, you've been noticing an increase in anal cancer. At the same time, you've been noticing a decrease in colorectal cancer before the program started.
Yeah, we are seeing a lot of anal cancer, and some of it presents to us referred as a possible colon cancer because some of those cells you talked about are tucked up in the body a few inches at the top of the anal canal, and the HPV likes to cause cellular change and dysplasia and precancerous changes and then sometimes progresses to an actual cancer. And these present to us as something that I think most people would think of as a colon cancer. And the differentiation for a colorectal surgeon is that the true colorectal cancer is something called an adenocarcinoma, whereas HPV-related anal cancer is a squamous carcinoma. And they have very, very different types of treatment. But it's an extremely important conversation on a health program to talk about HPV vaccination because these are preventable cancers. And both boys and girls should be vaccinated against HPV. And it's very pertinent to talk about this in terms of colorectal cancer because in the colorectal anatomy, we do see squamous carcinomas, which are often HPV-related.
Let me, again, give our contact information. This is Line 1, your health connection. Our topic today is colorectal cancer. If you have questions, 550-8433. That's our local number, 550-8433. We'll be here till just about 3 o'clock, a couple of minutes before. Toll-free number 1-888-353-5752. And our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. I would suspect that many people who have a very high genetic risk or have inflammatory bowel disease, there are some very less common genetic problems and then inflammatory bowel have a very high risk or a higher risk of colorectal cancer. Do you think most of those individuals are aware that they have that risk?
That they have an increased risk?
Risk, and that the screening would therefore be suggested to be different in those individuals.
I think that's mixed. I think that there are some do, but I would say probably the majority of the time, I don't think that they are aware that their surveillance patterns should be different. So
that if you have a category where you're having higher risk, there's a whole different recommendation. The recommendations may change based on the individual's risk, but also what you found at previous colonoscopies.
Absolutely. A lot of times those screenings may start sooner or at an earlier age and then at more frequent intervals.
And also for women with a personal history of breast cancer, endometrial cancer, or ovarian cancer, all of those cancers increase your risk of colorectal cancer.
So why is that?
Because they're related genetically. Genetic defects cause cells to undergo transformation, and they're related
genetically. Like this BRCA1 and 2 thing?
That specific BRCA gene is probably not related to colorectal cancers, mm-hmm. but there's other related genes that are.
So isn't it true also? I mean, if you've had one cancer, is your risk of another cancer increased? And the question always is it because of the treatment or is it because there's something wrong with your immune system? And what's really fascinating about the biology, as we understand as the immunology, is that we constantly are making screw-ups as we reproduce DNA, and we're doing it millions and millions of times, I think, a day. And so you're going to make some errors, and we naturally have cells and technology and pathways that fix those things. But when we have genes that don't allow us to make those fixes, that increases the risk. That's what BRCA1 and BRCA2 is, and now we know there's a handful of others, perhaps maybe even 100 more different genetic defects that might do that. And so some people just have more increased risk of colorectal cancer. Some may have more risk of skin cancer. Some may have more risk of different kinds of cancers. What about misconceptions? Kimberly, you're just kind of starting, I think, into this whole world of medicine and cancer and misconceptions. Have you been able to find what you think are myths or misconceptions that are bothersome to you as you're out there trying to do something to prevent these things from happening?
Well, I think it's just trying to open the door to start the discussion to talk about it. I feel like it's where breast cancer and self-breast exams was many decades ago, where people weren't uncomfortable, and when you're talking about cancers and going underneath your clothes, as we say in the South. It has to be framed in a particular way, and people have to be comfortable, and it does have to be something that's common. You know, we have to see it on TV. We have to read about it in the paper. We have to know people. We have to normalize the issue and be comfortable talking about it and sharing about it.
So...
And sometimes it's a cultural thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get at. And that's there's so many landmines between talking to a patient and a physician or a healthcare provider. And as you do this for a long, long period of time, your whole frame of reference about how you address people. And I think we've gotten better and better and better at it. But what I'm hearing you saying is I'm a consumer. I'm a patient, and I look at it a little bit differently than a physician might.
Well, I think from a physician's standpoint, and from public health as well, sometimes we want to do a lot more as we educate the patient. And sometimes just planting the seed and following up is what I have to do in terms of opening the door with awareness about this particular issue.
There's an email that wants to know about changes in the horrible solution they've capitalized. We have to drink prior to the test. I couldn't get it all down. Can't we just take a pill? Are there changes, modifications, things that simplify but still give us a clean enough area to look at?
I think that in terms of the preps, there are a lot of different types of preps that you can take. I personally think that they've made a pretty significant improvement in the preps compared to what it first started out as. I can tell you from personal experience, having had a colonoscopy, the prep that we're using, for instance, has absolutely no taste. You mix it in Gatorade, I think this is one of your earlier question about misconceptions. The prep, that's mm-hmm. one of the big ones I hear,
right.
And obviously here with this email, I think there are different types. There are the pills, but you have to take a lot of pills if that's the only mm-hmm. the only type you're going to use. We tend to use one that's a Miralax prep. It has no flavor, and we actually mix it in Gatorade. Mm-hmm. And when I did mine, I used two different flavors of Gatorade, mm-hmm. to mix it up, with a smaller number of pills. And so, I can personally tell you, it's not that unpleasant. It was just basically drinking Gatorade. So in terms of the taste of the prep, I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions I hear about these days. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Mark, but.
There are many different bowel preps available on the market, and I've practiced long enough to have tried most of them. One of my favorites was a tiny volume prep that you just had to take a couple of shot glasses of prep, but it was so strong and powerful that it ended up harming some people, yeah. So that was pulled off the market.
Cramping.
Well, also electrolyte imbalance and fluid imbalances. Yeah. So yeah. Every prep has pros and cons, and in our practice we've settled on one that is... It doesn't have any unpleasant taste. It does involve drinking a fair amount of Gatorade. So if you hate Gatorade, you're probably not going to like it. But that's something to talk to your practitioner about, because there are many choices for preps, and you can talk about which one might be better for you.
I had an email that reminded me and said, I've said this. I don't know if I have or not, but the best screening test is the one that a person's willing to do. So, you need to negotiate sometimes to get something done. And again, it gets down to just talking with individuals. And we come into a doctor's office with so many misconceptions. You heard Dr. Woodard say the worst thing about his colonoscopy was taking the liquid. Well, I don't want to scare anybody off. I think it's well worth the risk, and there probably are better ways to go. And I just didn't like the taste of the one I got. So next time, I'll ask him for Gatorade.
Yeah, but I think the worst part you mentioned is the worst part is taking that prep. One of the misconceptions I think a lot of times is that it's you're awake, which I don't think is really the case the majority of the time these days. And then also, people have these stigmas about the area of the body. I can't tell you how many times a day I hear, "Why did you go into this?" And people come in anxious to talk about their colon-related issues, or either embarrassed about that. And I just would like to get out there is that, when you come in to see your gastroenterologist, your colorectal surgeon, it's no different than going to see your dentist or your eye doctor, from our standpoint. And it's not something you should be embarrassed about or anxious about. And that There are people around you with these same types of issues, and it's much more common than you think. And there, and this can be treated or screened. And I hate to hear people when they're letting that stop them from seeking adequate treatment or screening.
Absolutely. And I'd like to just highlight some of the myths that we were going to talk to about colorectal cancer. I have patients say, well, this is only a disease of men. Absolutely incorrect. The incidence in men and women is almost identical, so it's both men and women. I have patients say, well, it's only for old people. I say, absolutely not. Colorectal cancer screening should start by the time you reach age 50, unless you have risk factors, and it may need to start considerably earlier, 10 to 15 years early in your 30s or early 40s. In certain populations, Native Americans and Black populations, the screening is now supposed to start by mid-40s. So there are many myths, and another important myth I think to try and dispel is that patients say, I'm going to wait until I have a problem, and then I'm going to get my colonoscopy. And that misses the entire point of trying to get in there to prevent the cancer. If you wait until you have a problem, you very well are probably waiting until you have a cancer. And while many colorectal cancers are treatable, not all are. So it is safer and easier to prevent before it turns into a cancer.
Yeah. I mean, the logic of that is not good. I mean, if you're waiting until you have symptoms, bleeding, pain, obstruction, bloating, your likelihood of cure now is decreased dramatically, is what we know. All right. We've got, looks like, the last minute here. I like to end up by just asking individuals, what do you want people to take away from the program, Kimberly? What's the one message?
The one message is to get screened. You have options in the prep and in the way that you're screened.
We have several links on our website. Or the American Cancer Society can give you specifics about what your when you should be screened, depending on what your specific situation is. Dan?
Get your colonoscopy. Don't wait until it's too late. Prevent that chance of having cancer.
I would say I agree with both the other guests. I would also like to add, this is not a disease of older people. We are seeing quite a sharp rise in the incidence of colorectal cancer, including anal cancers, in younger patients.
Symptoms would be?
Bowel change, bleeding, pain, change in your general sense of wellness. There's many symptoms.
Unexplained weight loss, maybe.
You know, one of the people in my office likes to say, a hemorrhoid is not always a hemorrhoid, and that's the classic thing. If a young person presents with bleeding, they're told, oh, it's just a hemorrhoid. It's not always just a hemorrhoid. Come and see your colorectal surgeon or other appropriate health provider.
Okay. Thanks very much to Kimberly Morgan of the American Cancer Society and the Anchorage Colorectal Cancer Surgeons, Mark Kemmons and Dan Rossi, for taking the time with us today. If you would like to continue the discussion, you can join us on Facebook. That link is at our website, alaskapublic.org. On the next Line One, we're going to continue a little bit into cancer, talking about mammographies and the current guidelines for that, for screening for breast cancer. It'll be Monday, March 14th here at FM 91.1. Pat Yak is our chief content officer at Alaska Public Media. Dave Waldron, audio engineer, today's program. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.